You are listening to Let's Go JoJo, the weekly JoJo's Bizarre Adventure podcast from Dynamite in the Brain and the Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the remaining members of the Let's Go gang. Dwayne.
Hello.
And Brian. That sounds like we've got rid of everybody else, but no. Christmas is eating them up.
It's eating up time as well, so what can you do?
Yes. So this week's episode, though, JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, episode 38, Crazy D, open brackets, diamond, close brackets, is Unbreakable, part 2, in which many, many chickens come home to roost for our villain.
Yeah, he seems to, I mean, like, it seems like all his shit is working together, all his little plans and stuff, yeah.
Well, like, until it doesn't, and then.
Until everything goes to shit, but that's the good bit.
Yes, so we know everything's about to go to shit for him because there are sound effects in the opening credits.
I was like, yeah, they don't add the sound effects till the fat lady sings.
Yes. And boy, is it singing by the end of this episode.
Mm.
So you have to fill me in with like the first few minutes because I was getting my dinner out of the oven. There's a bit with a fat man and a pair of panties, but...
But just before that, he's ringing up his, I guess his identity's boss. And apologizing profusely, said, I can't make it into work. I got to discipline my son. Yeah, I know it sounds trivial, but I'm so sorry, boss. I really got to do this. I'll be 15 minutes late. Yeah, sorry. Bowing while on the phone. He's like, damn the person whose face and hands I stole. Because he's so apologetic and he really wanted to climb that corporate ladder despite being such a shit and everything like that. And then there's a fat dude who says he's a neighbor and he's like, hey, whatever the neighbor, the name of the person's house where most of this episode takes place is, someone's been stealing her fucking panties lately. And that's fucking wrong. And I'm keeping an eye out. I was going to sleep till noon, but I just decided to get up randomly. And Kira's just like, ugh, whatever, dude. Walks off and there's a pair of panties on a bush outside her house. And he's like, oh, now's my chance. And of course, we all know it's a bomb. It's a bomb. And it explodes him.
But he still seems very happy.
Well, he died with the thought of grabbing her panties. And I guess his eyeballs fall on them.
His eyeballs seem to be doing the thinking.
Yeah, yeah. it's an odd one. But, you know, not the most unusual thing I've seen. So was the implication he was the one stealing them the whole time? And he got up before noon so he could catch the thief? I don't know.
But anyway, then it becomes a game of cat and mouse between Hayato and Josuke, who are in the building, and Kira, who's outside.
So Kira's saying that, okay, Josuke totally wants me to go in there because he'll do better in close range. I don't want to get anywhere near that motherfucker because he'll mess me up. Just being the absolute coward that all the best JoJo's villains are. Mm.
First of all, Josuke sort of admitting that Okuyasu's dead.
Yeah.
So therefore, he's going to have to kill Kira with his stand.
Yep.
To get revenge. And so they're like, stay by that wall, Hayato. I'm going to stand here and see how this guy's going to come in. Mm. But then Hayato's hair starts blowing.
He keeps having to pull it over his ear, yeah.
Yeah, and he realizes there's a bubble coming through this hole in the wall.
I like the way you could see the crack when he was backing up against the wall. I was like, there's a crack in the wall, Josuke. It's the one crack in that wall.
Then he's sort of backing away. Then he finds a ashtray, which he throws a load of ashes up so he can see the bubble.
He grabs a bunch of cigarettes so he can light a fire because he thinks it's tracking him the same way.
Yeah,
what was the second part of his stand called again?
Oh, the one he only used once.
Yeah, the little tank, the heat-seeking one. He thought it was
bites
a heat-seeking...
Bites the dust.
Yeah, yeah. He thought it was a heat-seeking bubble.
Yes.
But obviously that plan didn't work because the bubble keeps following him.
It's just following him around. And he ends up blowing up. He gets up on top of the staircase and it blows the railing up. And he ends on the floor with two bits of the railing stuck in his... One in his leg, one in his stomach.
Yeah. It looks pretty bad. I think the one in his leg is going, like, right through.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then he's like... Then Hayate starts dragging him away and he goes, drag me in the opposite direction. You're dragging me away from Kira. Drag me towards him.
So I can kill him. Yeah, that kind of intensity.
He's like, you're going to have to get the... Yeah, we hear him sending another bubble at this point as well. He's going to send a big one to finish him off. He's got the cigarette lighter out of my pocket. And he goes, but it's that didn't work. He goes, I'm not going to use it this time. I'm going to, well, we don't need it because you can actually see the bubble because it's so big, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
He says, I'm not going to light cigarettes. He just sets fire to Hayato's jacket.
He's just setting fire. He's like, don't fucking move, Hayato. No, don't move. He's like, just get, what are you doing? He's like, I don't have time to explain. Yes. Just let me set fire to you. And the kids just look petrified, obviously.
Oh, and as he was falling, though, he sent that. Was that when he sent his glass thing out?
Oh, shit. I think he might have sent it out before the...
Yeah, I think it's just as you're right, exploding. You're right. Yeah.
No, no, he sent out the glass thing before. And obviously, Kira just deflects it and goes like, oh, you're not going to get me a flicking glass through a window at me kind of thing. And that's why he was sending like the final attack kind of thing, wasn't it?
Mm. Yeah, because... Yeah, and then...
I don't remember the order of events. Yeah,
I can't remember the order of events because then there's like a very sort of stretching the rules of the stand...
Oh, I fucking loved it. It's just kind of bullshit. So he got some of his blood. Was it his? Sorry, was it Kira's blood or his own blood?
His own blood. Yes, because he gets some of his own blood in the previous episode with some of his blood.
Yeah. And so basically he reformed the glass with a piece of his blood in it.
Yeah.
So once the blood leaves his body, it's not part of him, so he can make it reform again. So the glass shard is trying to flick back into Kira because there's some blood on his jacket.
And to stay on brand, the glass shard has also been reformed in the shape of a heart.
Yeah, yeah, he's getting revenge and, like, you know, everybody's going to keep it on brand, yeah. So, yeah, it stabs him right in the back, but not... He's going like, oh, I've been really badly injured, but not as bad as Josuke, so I'm still winning, technically. He still has to pump himself up.
Yeah, trying to get the exact... Yeah, yes. No, Bites the Dust is the time rewind. What's the other one, then?
Oh,
It's my brain is going...
The little tank thing. We know how it works tank. Anyway.
Sheer Heart Attack, that's it.
Yeah, of course. Another fucking
Another Queen song, yes.
Should have got it. But yeah, so he's setting fire to the little kid, and your man's gonna send his ultimate bubble, which again doesn't sound bad, but if you've seen part two, you know bubbles can be badass.
Yes.
He's setting fire to the kid, but what he's not, what he's actually doing is setting fire to the photograph that was in his pocket.
Yes, because when he hits Kira with the glass shard, he dropped his telephone, and that's how he realized, oh, he must have been on the phone to somebody.
But he went to pick up his phone again when he ducked around the corner.
Yes.
So he's like, why the fuck is he keeping his phone? It's like, he's obviously not on the phone to his boss, so...
He's like, no, I almost forgot you existed, old man who lives in a photo.
Yeah, he's really worried about being found out, and Josuke actually manages to grab the phone. Like, it knocks the phone out of his hand.
Yes.
The dude's trying to escape the kid's pocket.
And then he does his best impression of the dad and guides the bomb towards the dad, blowing him up.
He's putting on a hoarse voice, but he's whispering to make it sound like he's in a kid's pocket. And Kira's fooled by it, obviously.
He's like, now he's fine. Now he's dead. Well, technically, he was a ghost.
But he's going to hell. Yeah. I did like his kind of reveal to him. It was like, oh, yeah, you totally got me. No, you didn't. Ha ha. Just Kira's reaction of everything going wrong for him.
And this is where he gets in with the second glass shard, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I forget. I think he threw that out at some point, and then he got him while his guard was down, realizing that he just blew up his own ghost photo dad.
Yes. he gets him with the second shard. Then he steps out to confront him because they're now equally injured.
Yeah.
Where he gets a really great pose with him with the pole stuck through him.
He's still Vulcan.
Yes. And that expression, though, he's got the utter disdain on his face.
It's like, oh, what I'm going to do to you, you're in range, motherfucker.
And when the roof blew up, though, we also saw that the other lads had finally noticed all these explosions going on in the town.
Well, I guess at the start of the episode, it shows that the rain had stopped, but there's been a few explosions since.
Yes.
They're just not very perceptive, apparently, until they are.
Yeah, so he's getting ready to pound him to death, and then his final blows are blocked by air bubbles, because the stray cat thought he was being attacked.
Yeah, because he was pummeling the general body of Killer Queen.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like the cat just defends itself naturally, as we know.
And Kira's like, ah, oh, fate has saved me again. Fate's on my side. It always saves me. I'll turn these things into bombs, and then I'll blow this kid up once and for all. So he's about to do that when the bomb suddenly goes in a different direction. And da-da-da, Okuyasu's back.
Oh, thank God. yeah, Okuyasu is just like, hey, guys, I woke up from a thing. It's like, I always wonder where the shit I send with my hand goes. Oh, well, wipes away bubble. And it's like, oh, yeah, his power's really fucking good. Yeah. It's just in case you forgot. It's really OP. It's just stupid.
Yeah,
he's just stupid, rather.
Yeah, and he'd had a depressing dream, he explains.
Yeah, I was in a dark thing, and I was walking towards the light. I met my dead brother. And I said, I'm going to follow you, bro. And he's like, nah, man, you got to do your own thing. I was like, cool, I'll go back to Mario then. And then I woke up. It's just like, but I'm very stupid, so I don't exactly know what had just happened.
And so through tears, Josuke is giving him shit for this, for being asleep so long.
It's his friend, but he's just really so glad to see him.
But Okuyasu is like, oh, you still got the attitude even with those injuries. You can't be that bad if you're giving out to me.
And at that stage, obviously Kira's shitting himself.
Yes,
because it's just like, oh fuck, I gotta run away. And then he turns around and they're like, hey guys, we see you over there. It's Josuke and the lads.
Yes, they're like, who, that guy's injured?
Or Jotaro.
Oh yes, yeah, Jotaro's like, that man's oh no, it's Koichi's noticed it first.
Yeah, Koichi says, hey, this is where the explosion came from. Hey, that guy's injured. And Jotaro's like, yeah, that's the kid from the photo.
Yes.
Or actually, I think someone else says it's the kid from the photo, and he goes, that's his dad. The pieces are all coming together.
And Josuke and Okuyasu and Hayato are there as well. Hayato gives that brilliant speech about how fate won't save him this time because you're up against the heart of justice.
Yeah. Fire emblems.
Yes, it's like, there's like the emergency services are here and he's absolutely surrounded.
Yep.
And you get this long shot zooming in on his despairing face.
So I assume next week is just like 20 minutes of him just being pummeled, right?
I'm not even sure it'll be 20 minutes. I just think it'll be like 5 minutes and then we'll just have the epilogue.
See, I think I saw someone complaining about it, but otherwise it's like, if you get pummeled now, there's no reason to come back and watch the last thing. It'll be so much fun. This prick.
Yeah, it's like the get out of Bites of Dust was like the first 5 minutes of last week's episode. It's just...
Yeah. And after all, like you say, after all his plans and various different things... Oh, we neglected to mention Okuyasu pulled the flower out of Stray Cat. He pulled Stray Cat out of Killer Queen's stomach.
Yes.
And just goes like, hey, I got this now. What are you going to do about it? And I was just like, oh my God, everything that he'd planned, it was just like, well, shit. It's all gone to shit.
Beaten by children.
Well, there's at least two adults there, but one of them's very childish.
They weren't much help. They were around the corner most of the time.
No. But they were there.
I suppose Rohan did get the photos.
Yeah,
and take
them
to
what started the whole
Rimi.
Yeah, the whole ball falling. Mm.
But yeah, I like this episode. I like the flicking of the glass. Of course, calls back to when they were fighting the rat.
Yeah, yeah. So it's not like it's a thing that they haven't set up beforehand.
Yeah,
you need to find a way to increase your range, and not only that, but he's figured out how to do a homing attack.
Yes.
Which is pretty great, yeah.
And I like the fact just how pathetic Kira is as like the final boss compared to Dio or Kars.
Well, Dio was amazingly pathetic for all the fucking power he had.
That's true, yes. But in terms of sheer power in fighting, it's like...
Well, yeah, that's why he had all these fucking plans set up and he had his ghost dad and a fucking cat flower working for him. And it's like, yeah, fucking I keep evolving. I'm great. It's like, no, dude, you don't realize how much you're going to get fucked over once... all this falls apart on you.
Yeah, it was good stuff.
Yeah.
And looking forward to the final episode next week.
I'm just kind of sorry it's ending now. Hopefully there'll be more JoJo after this.
Yeah, I suspect there will be.
I think this has done pretty well for itself, right?
Not as well as Stardust Crusaders, I don't think.
Mm.
But I suspect
I suppose it's that's
done
understandable,
well enough.
Yeah.
And obviously it's getting a live-action movie as well, so...
That's probably going to boost them wanting to do more. It's like, wow, what comes after this? Well, the new show. You know, yeah.
Yeah, I see some people don't like part 5 or like part five the least, maybe.
Is part five Jolene?
No, that's six.
What's part five?
It's the one where they're in Italy.
Oh, what's it, Giovanni or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It looks like it's a lot of fun. I mean, like, that's pretty much JoJo's for me anyway, so.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, that'd be all new to me.
Yeah.
Weirdly, I don't know much about five and six, but I do know about seven and eight.
Yeah, fair enough, though.
It's like an alternate reality version where there's riding horses. Of course we'll be onto that.
Yeah, it's the first part, but horse racing to collect the body parts of Jesus Christ.
That would be a great segue to Mr. Osamatsu if you'd watched it. We'll have to save that for next week.
I'm sorry. Well, if it's a Christmas one, it might be better to watch.
It's not a Christmas one. It's the one which was sponsored by the Japanese Racing Association.
Oh, okay.
So it's a half hour, in theory, promotional piece for the JRA. But
does it not really show it very well?
I mean, imagine what Mr. Osamatsu is going to do with the topic of horse racing.
Terribleness, just completely take the piss.
When you see it, if you were to make a list of all the beats they were likely to hit, I think they pretty much hit them all.
Okay.
It's one which is like a sketch show, so.
Good.
Yeah, so we'll talk about that next week. Mm. Right, let's crack on with a thing which even Mr. Osamatsu couldn't outshine on the comedy levels. And that is Dragon Ball Super Episode 70, Champa's Challenge. This time we fight with baseball.
So essentially the premise for this is, what's Champa's angel called?
I can't remember. Did I make
Whis's sister or whatever.
Yes.
And it's another drink, obviously. But
Vados.
Vados is... The entire episode is basically her trying to trick him into exercise.
Yes.
Because he's fat.
And also it's Bulma trying to make Vegeta jealous by praising Yamcha. And Yamcha being the sole person who knows how to play baseball.
Yeah, no one knows how to play baseball. I did like friggin' the exchange between Goku and Gohan at one point. It was like, so Goku was like, do you know how to play baseball? He's like, nah, I'm a fucking nerd. And it's like, shit, we're kind of in trouble here. They have to figure it out as they play. I also really liked Vegeta's line later on. It reminded me of Jotaro. It's like, I think I got this baseball figured out. Because you know he doesn't.
And that's just before he throws the ball to injure somebody, isn't it?
So, there's a lot of really good jokes of just the standard comedy thing that Dragon Ball does very well now, of guys being completely out of their element because they're atomic supermen. They're not made for baseball. Like Yamcha, who excelled at it, apparently.
Yes. And the greatest gag ever at the end.
I don't even want to say it because I managed to not get it spoiled for me. And if you can manage to not get it spoiled, don't.
No.
It's really good.
Such a great visual gag.
You have to be kind of familiar with the series, but yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but then the spice is the other character's reaction to it.
Yeah, just drilling the point home in case you missed it as a joke.
Yamcha is kind of like the butt of it. I think what Bulma says is like, baseball's the only thing he's good at.
Yeah, that, I think she pretty much says exactly that.
And Pu-ah just seems like... seems just to be so much in love with Yamcha.
Yeah, it's nice to see that cat again. That's pretty good. I did also like Yamcha being kind of a dick, where they're like, hey, where's Tien and Chiaotzu? And it's like, I didn't fucking invite them, fuck them. Kind of thing. I want to shine. I want this to be the Yamcha show.
Yes. And Goku wanted Hit to be here.
Yeah, because he might get a fight out of it.
Yeah. Well, luckily for next week.
He gets his wish, kind of.
Yes.
A lot of good jokes in this one. I especially liked, there's so many good things. Like Vegeta being on the bad guys team so he can fight Goku. But for reasons I can't figure out, probably a coin toss or something, Gohan's on the bad guys team.
Goten.
sorry. Goten's on the bad guys team. And Trunks is on the Universe 7 team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Piccolo may also know how to play baseball.
He seems to have a better idea.
Yes. I think maybe Gohan would as well.
I thought he said he didn't.
No, maybe he didn't, no. Yeah. I mean, Goku definitely doesn't. Vegeta definitely doesn't.
No, he's got a very poor idea of what it is. Also, I like the amount of superpowers that kept going up, and the two umpires kind of coming in. It's like, no explosions. Yes. And the two guys, they go from the, what's that, what do you call that thing where the managers are kicking dirt at each other because you can't do physical contact in baseball. But they actually start, you know, straight up destroying the universe again. Yes, it's like, no, we have to play baseball.
Bad cats.
Some good cat faces, actually, yeah.
Yeah, there is some good faces. And I like, as you say, the fact that it's all just a trick to make Ciampa do some exercise. And the fact that that's not driven home either in the episode, but it's just there enough that you can tell.
It's there enough as a bookend, you know.
Yeah, for like Vados's like, facial expressions. That
she's just happy with the whole situation.
Yes.
But yeah. So again, it's like the sitcom premise of it's not the universe versus universe. It's like, we got to get him to exercise. Yeah, good stuff.
It is. Very good stuff. Mm. Right, next up, let's go through the shorts. Bono, episode 23. Fenny goes, ah.
We finally meet that pink guy.
Yes, the fennel fox.
I thought it was a fennec. Oh, okay.
Maybe, could be. I don't know.
It's some kind of fox anyway, yeah, yes. Sure.
I don't know. See, I just guessed, so either of us could be right.
I didn't get what the deep message of this one is. No. Actually got past me, and I was like, maybe it's just being weird.
Yeah, it's like Fenny likes to go, thinks going, ah, when something's boring is fun.
See, it's basically like, I think the way, and she doesn't explain it very well to anyone.
I'm not even sure. They call her Fenny Cun, so she might be a boy.
Oh, I thought it was a girl.
No, it's Fenny Cun in the title.
Yeah, okay.
But I suspect the problem is everybody's being voiced by women.
Yeah, that's not really helping matters much. But I'm going to go with she for the time being, just for sake of pronouns. She's basically like, instead of being bored, if she like turns around, is her example, and there's nobody there, and instead of like going like, oh, I'm disappointed, I thought there'd be someone there, she purposely tries to be disappointed and has this noise that she makes to make it more exciting for herself.
Yes.
So because she's planned the disappointment, it's fun.
But tries to explain it to Bono and Chipmunk, and they ruin it.
Yeah. Not on purpose, just because they don't fucking understand. Yeah. Well, Chipmunk may be on purpose, actually.
Yeah, Chipmunk, I think, definitely on purpose. Explains exactly with diagrams, hell, this will stop being fun. And in doing so, stops it being fun.
Yeah, he tries to specifically ruin it by drawing it out. Being very pedantic. But, it's pretty good.
Yeah, and then goes back and talks to Fenny's dad, and then Fenny's dad tricks Fenny into scratching his back. The end.
Seems like a dad thing, yeah, okay.
Yeah, it was a very dad thing to do. It was like...
I'm not sure there was a deep message to this one, because I'm expecting it with Bono at this stage.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe I should have went, and the disappointment would have been okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shonen Shiba, Go-Go, Goma-chan, episode 25, Goma-chan and the Snow. The return of Mao Chan's uncle. I was not expecting to return. That was not what I was expecting to return.
The creepy dude who he's afraid he'll turn into. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, so we get Pepepe is trying to deliver something to the Ishibe family.
Initially she's fine with it because she has her GPS, but then she drops her phone into the canal.
The teacher is wandering around in the snow doing all sorts of exercises in swimming trunks.
I love the fact that he's the only person out because it's too fucking cold in his swimming trunks, and he's no good. It's like, hey, could you help me out? It's like, nope. You know, he just doesn't know any of the information that she's looking for.
So the kids make a snowman using Goma as the snowman's head.
And to surprise passers-by kind of thing.
The uncle is making snow women...
Which is like, the kids are impressed that, wow, you're really good at making snowmen. And he's just like, this is my ideal woman. And it's just like,
He's making more and more until he gets it absolutely right. Mal tries to pretend to be like the plastic animals in the playground.
Yeah, and just get covered in snow for himself.
Yes.
He wants to see what it feels like.
Well, they think when Pepepe shows up, they think she's a snow witch or whatever they're called.
Yeah, I think they call her Snow Woman, but that's Snow the Woman. Thing they're referring to. Yeah,
the yokai.
Mm.
She gets Everyone basically just gets progressively colder and colder,
except for the teacher.
Yes, Gomache gets mad, and they try to feed him pretend ice ice pops.
Yeah, and that just gets him upset because he wanted to realize Bob. Mm.
And they all finally get home and they discover the parcel was ice cream.
And Ashiba's dad says, like, my fucking dad is a fucking genius. Yes. Best thing is to have ice cream on a cold day indoors.
And a bit of cartoon physics to wrap it all up is the teacher gets turned into a giant snowball rolling down a hill, rolls through the uncle's snow women, and ends up inside one of the snow women, but with his head sticking out where the head should be.
Ruining his newest ideal woman.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was it. That's pretty much it.
Yep. I think we covered most of it. Pretty fun.
It was. I think the teacher was a good way of breaking up the various different bits of storyline.
It's doing like you said, the multiple different kind of jokes, but it's kind of put together pretty well.
Yeah, there was a few shots which were far better than you'd expect from a...
Not from this show, though.
Not from this show, no, but from these types of shows, yes, it's more ambitious than you'd expect from just a gag delivery system. Okay, Ninja Girl and Samurai Master, episode 10, or 11 even. If Your Boss Doesn't Favour You, in which our cute ninja girl gets sliced up and is bleeding out by the end of the episode.
Yep, she's on her way to assassinate the, it's their strategist, isn't it?
It's the general who's sickly.
Yeah. I couldn't remember his occupation. Yeah. She's dressed as like a commoner or whatever.
Yes.
But she's instantaneously discovered by, I forgot those three guys.
The Mino Three.
She's instantaneously discovered because she's carving things into the wood so she can't get lost in the woods, but she's doing it with a kunai.
Yes.
That's like, ah, shit.
She gets into a fight with them three, but
she doesn't have a sword in her, so she's kind of on the defensive and gets mussed up.
Yes, but she gets away by throwing caltrops, which one of them steps on, and the other two are really impressed. They go, oh, these are the famous caltrops that ninjas use. I've never seen them before.
Yeah, everyone's a nerd about ninjas. It's pretty great. but it distracts them long enough, sure.
There's some other jokes. Oh, there's Oja Nobunaga's wondering what he'll do if Chidori gets killed, and then his wife offers to take her place.
He's like, she must come back.
Do the Mino 3 sing a song?
They kind of introduce themselves in a kind of sing-songy way, and that distracts them long enough for her to get away for a bit. I think they talk. It also explains how the word for, obstinate, is derived from one of their names.
Oh, yes, yeah.
I think it's obstinate.
I think you're right. It's like, because they're kind of describing themselves, aren't they? It's like, points out. Yeah. And then, she's bleeding out and is found by the person she was supposed to be coming to assassinate.
And the commentator's annoyed because that was supposed to be a reveal for the next episode, but the dude reveals it by saying his name out loud at the end of this one.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good stuff. And as I say, kind of weird in this cute comedy thing for the main character to get sliced open.
Well, I mean, they have that from the opening, and they have, like, death and fucking shit all around, but it's kind of like, okay, we're doing, like, a cutesy fucking little girl thing, but it's about, like, the warring era in Japan.
Yes.
So there's going to be a lot of motherfuckers killed.
And they'd be very historically accurate.
Like, way too historically accurate, yeah.
Right, let's take... that's a good segue into things which aren't historically accurate. Time Bokan 24.
What are you talking about? That's not what happened?
Back to the warring states again.
Yep.
Episode 11, guns being introduced to Japan was actually blank first being introduced to Japan. Pants.
Yeah, it's pants. It's pants. Do you find underpants funny? Because, oh boy, this is the episode for you.
To be honest, yes, I did. I thought this was the best episode since the caveman one. In fact,
I don't find pants that funny, so I guess it was really falling flat in me.
It's not the pants which are funny; it's the fact
everyone wearing pants all the time,
and also the fact that the thing which I really liked about it, similar to the caveman one, is the expectations of the heroes and the villains are kind of completely thwarted. It's like the heroes kind of solve the problem very quickly right from the start.
Yeah, and they're actually kind of disturbed by it. Well, yes. You want it anyway.
They're increasingly bothered by what they've done to make sure the true history comes true.
Yeah, it's like, this is kind of weird. Everyone's walking around in underpants.
And the villains, whenever they try and fix the true history and make it what's in the
history making
books,
guns look pretty fucking sweet, yeah,
they just make it worse.
They accidentally increase the popularity of underpants.
Yes.
Mm.
And then there's that crazy sequence about how all the different types of underpants, including a pair of underpants for committing suicide in.
Which had, like, a duck for a dick? I'm not sure how that...
Yes, that is a cultural reference thing, which I don't know where... It comes up in various anime.
I was wondering, was it, like, a pun, like, seppuku means fucking duck?
And it could well be a...
Yeah, pun, yeah. Yes. Because it was just like, that seems very undignified.
Yeah, so the plot is that the first Portuguese guy is washed up and he tries to sell them guns, but he's more interested in the underpants that he's wearing.
His pants obviously got lost in the store.
Yes.
Something. It's not entirely clear why he's just wearing underpants.
But the bad guys come along and steal the underpants, and the good guys are like, oh, what are we going to do? And then Callan's like, well, we've got another pair.
Yeah, because she, at the start of the episode, she specifically saw him changing into his nerd underpants, the wife runs with his name on it. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, so they get his underpants and they duplicate them and then give them back to him.
Yeah, she says specifically, okay, we can't give you his underpants, but we can lend you his underpants, and he's more weirded out about that.
Yes.
As you would be, I think. Yeah.
All the underpants they produce have also got his name written in them.
Because I think that's part of the design, yes. Yeah.
But they still covet, the Lord still covets his underpants because his underpants have got elastic in them.
Yeah, they don't have the technology for rubber, I guess.
Yeah. And they have to use the second mecha again, and they learn that it transforms into a humanoid form this time.
Mm.
And that's it. I mean, there's lots of underpant gags, and I
was
a fan
of
them.
Lots of underpants gags.
Dwayne, not so much, clearly. Oh, well. Comedy is subjective.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know, everything just veers straight into fart jokes. I'm kind of like, eh.
Was there any fart jokes in this?
Not in this one, but I'm using as an example. Like, just like the sheer amount of underpants jokes.
I should describe Haybot to you now, and then you'll be even, you're going to think this was high art.
Okay, so, yeah, I guess that's fart joke central, all right. Yeah.
This week's, well, this was piss joke central. In this
oh, week. God, worse. All right, great.
So this week's Haybot opens with the most naked attempt to sell Haybot toys or any sort of toy I've ever seen in anime. The first minute is basically Haybot dressed as Santa telling you to get your parents to buy you Haybot toys for Christmas.
That's got to be illegal, right?
It's not quite as naked as I made it out, but it's pretty close, pretty damn close as to that. Anyway, the rest of the episode involves Haybot's switch gets swollen due to some sort of incoherent voodoo.
Right.
So the fidgety bot, I think that's his name, basically is the one who infers that you're busting to go to the loo.
Okay.
Hits a picture of Haybot with his plug in Haybot's switch, but only the picture of him, and then Haybot's switch begins to swell up, and it would occasionally burst out water.
Okay.
That is the A plot. The B plot is that, taking advantage of this, the two characters who think they should be the main characters...
Mm.
Challenge them for a battle to take over the show.
Yeah.
And they win and they become the main characters and it goes straight to their heads. It's like almost immediately they become like Rao. they've taken like a dark turn within minutes.
Yeah.
Of taking over the show. And so the other characters try and get Neji and Haybot to battle him to take back over the show again. They're like, oh, but we've got to sort out this swollen thing. Plus, we like not being the main characters. We don't have to do anything anymore. We can just lounge around all day.
There's nothing they have to do. And they seem quite lazy, so sure.
Yeah, but it turns out the only cure is to win the Avoca battle. So, curses. They have to solve the A plot and the B plot at the same time. And that's Haybot. I'm hoping for a Christmas episode, either this week or next.
Well, I mean, like, based off him dressing as Santa. And...
I mean, yeah, they gotta go for it.
Mm.
Okay, next up. Unless you watched any Flip Flappers, or have you given up fully?
I've given up. Maybe I'll be told later on by people who stick up with it, it'll improve. But yeah, I've given up for the time being.
Righty ho. What should we talk next?
Will we finish off the the things that have to do with Nobunaga?
Yeah, okay. Drifters.
Yeah, sure.
Baba Yetto, episode 10. The worst animated episode yet.
Yeah, there's a lot of exposition, so they don't have to put as much into a lot of guys are even off model, like.
Yeah, except, I mean, the bits which look good are the stuff with the Black King.
Yeah. That's it's a very different direction with that. And the I thought the dragon looked pretty great.
Yeah, he's fighting the bronze dragon we saw in a previous episode.
When you say fighting, like totally fucking defeating the bronze dragon, yeah.
And we kind of get an explanation of his power, is that he can replicate living cells.
Yeah, so he can, like, just make food out of, like, nothing or, like, one food or, like, as he does with a dragon, give cancerous growths all over its fucking body at once, which is like, ooh, dude, that sucks.
And, yeah, they're kind of like, if you can do, some of them are questioning, if you can do that, why is he training the humanoid races in...
Yeah, yeah. Why is he farming. Training them in agriculture and stuff like that? And he's like, well, unlike the almighty God, I'm not immortal.
Yes. Yeah. And also they're trying to make a unified religion for these people to follow.
Yeah, it's Rasputin mostly in charge of that, isn't it? Because, you know, I got to get a cult guy in on that. And he's like, oh, I've taken the best bits from this, and we're going to go with the symbol of, like, the eye, since you turned the moon into an eye and shit.
Yes, it's quite
it's in the graphic design as well.
It's nice to see their side of Nobunaga's plotting.
Like, I'll be honest with you, they don't really seem entirely like the bad guys.
No, they don't.
Like, everything they're doing is like, you know what? Kind of like based off the what's the empire called? Like, I keep forgetting
the Ort Empire. Yeah,
the Ort Empire. Based off the Ort Empire, like, yeah, fuck humans, dude. I mean, like, they literally say later on, yeah, it was definitely Hitler who met it.
Yes,
but still.
We also get all that side of things. We also get Joan of Arc.
Yes,
furious with her defeat,
her reaction to that, and other people's kind of reaction to it as well. Specifically, Rasputin and. Is it, it's not Anastasia.
It is Anastasia, yes.
Is it? Oh, yeah. Sorry, I thought it was a different Romanov. Okay. Yeah, and their kind of reasons for being in it. So, yeah, they get a lot of development and characterization there, which is quite nice.
Yes, because we have the two least, the most shallow characters showing up, who are Germany's sidekicks.
I can't remember what their names are. Yeah,
no, I can't remember. I mean, I still did laugh at the gag of, oh, you're lucky you're not my type.
That was pretty good, because
they describe their type, and then immediately their type shows up.
It's a pretty good joke, and it's nice, again, it's, I think as Niall was saying, it's like friggin' gay stereotypes in anime and stuff, but yeah, it's nice that they go like, oh yeah, he's actually a really good swordsman, but his killing intent isn't there. And he's like, ah, oh, it's a good thing you're not a sexy old man, or else I'll be totally like, and then, like, I guess, for lack of a better term, like, fucking, like, pan up along fucking Hannibal.
Yes. And they'd foreshadowed the Yuichi thing with his clothes slipping off when he was getting drunk with the dwarves.
Yeah. And the dwarves are kind of like, we're uncomfortable with this situation. Yeah, that was pretty good. It was nice. It was nice the elves kind of going like, hey, it's the dwarves from our stories. They're all drunk and eating and farting.
Violent, and they're getting more and more. Apparently, just eating, they can just... Their
muscle
metabolism
mass
can just
builds up straight away, yeah.
Convert food to muscle immediately, yeah.
That's pretty great. And the kind of unison of two dwarves randomly coming up is like, hey, you want to fight? To our main character kind of thing.
Saint Germain, Saint Germany, whatever you want to call him.
It's Germain in this, isn't
Germain,
it?
Germain, yes, maybe.
Yeah. I forgot exactly what his pseudonym was, but yeah.
Yeah, he's... He's a bit, I'm think particularly the bit when he says, What's he going to? What does he say? I'll sell you the Empire.
He basically wants to end the war before there's a really big war.
Because he shows up to see whether these guys are worth allying with.
And then he's like, oh, fuck, they've already made, like, a gun. Okay, they can make guns. All right, I'm with these guys.
Yes, and he's like, we could take the Empire without you having to...
Yeah, he's basically like, okay, I want to do minimum bloodshed. You'll just take out all the leaders, so there'll be minimal damage, and I'll make maximum profits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if he's supposed to be, like, slightly based on David Bowie's song, The Man Who Sold the World.
You think? Okay.
Possibly, because the album is David Bowie in a dress as well.
Yeah.
On the cover.
It could be something like that. But despite the like crazy, raging, fucking gay stereotype, it's nice to see him being like, oh yeah, I'm a fucking genius at this shit. Yes. You know, like we're getting to see all these guys. Like I said, I was really happy with Hannibal Sean. It's just like, oh, I've got a fucking cool idea. You know, kind of thing. That these guys actually have skills and shit.
Yeah. And yeah, then you get the dwarves continually amazing Oda Nobunaga about how quickly they'll, how many guns they'll be able to make.
Oh, that was class, because they basically produce a gun in a day. And they're like, oh, it's just a fucking thing. Oh, it's folded steel. Another guy kind of looks over. They're all like nerds about this shit. So they produce one. It's like, yeah, this will be pretty good. And Oda's like, oh my God, how many can you make? And he's like, tell you what, right? You keep us fed and keep us in booze and stuff. We can make 10. And he's like, fucking 10? Are you serious? He's like, jeez, dude, 10 a day. Come on, that's a lot of guns. And Nobunaga's like, holy fuck.
Yeah, and Yuichi's like, I don't understand why you just don't have...
I fucking love that, because I was
that,
like...
That bit is... Yeah, the Tohisa explains that the noise and the smoke are part of the...
The scaring your opponent.
Then Nobunaga gives them a little bit of why guns are great, and then he admits to himself that he can't tell them...
Yeah, because initially it looks like he's struggling to find words in it. And I was like, he knows exactly why guns are good. What the fuck doesn't he tell them? I was like, oh, because if he tells them that they could use the guns to rise up against him,
yes,
they'll fucking do it. brilliant.
Yeah, also maybe it would be too worrying for him and for them, like the... How is the philosophy of mechanized warfare basically, and he doesn't want to give it all out because either they'll be horrified and not want to do it, or they'll
fucking take over for themselves, which he also doesn't want. It's a pretty fun thing because initially I was like, that seems like he's a very out of character. Nobunaga knows why fucking guns are good, he loved guns, but really good turn on there. And I mean, like, I think despite the look of the show, this episode, I mean, a lot of the character stuff was pretty fun in this. And again, world building that I enjoy seeing the pieces fall into place. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was good stuff. Right. Let's move on to... Got that taken care of. It was pretty much all good stuff from here on out. Not that it wasn't good stuff, but I mean, exceptionally good stuff.
Yeah,
Tiger Mask Double, the mysterious Mr. Question, episode 10.
Oh, dear.
In which we get... probably the most disgusting thing I'd seen all week, when Mr. Question dislocates his arm in order to reach for the rope.
I thought it was bad enough when he dislocated his spine and like flipped completely back over. Your man had him in a half Nelson or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, and he just basically flips backwards and sends him flying. Because they're all like, oh, he won't be able to reach the rope from here. And then later on he needs to do just that and dislocates his arm, and you can see too much of it.
And then when he gets up and puts it all back together, that's the way his eyes just all...
Yeah, because ref's like, can you still... Are you okay? He's like, yeah, I'll be fine. It's like, ah, oh, Jesus, no.
It's the power of yoga.
Fucking loved... what's his name? I remembered it, now I've forgotten.
Yeah, same here. The comedy guy inserts himself in the commentary.
Yes, and he's really good at commentary because he knows he's fucking shit. And also the audience fucking love him. So it's like, oh yeah, he'll make a really good commentator.
And the other matches we have is it's the ace, he progresses. And then, of course, Yellow Devil just destroys the young lion guy from New Japan.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. It's the ace guy, and we get to see his... Again, all these guys are fake mask wrestlers. The guy who he's fighting is that guy who keeps showing up in the show.
Oh, yes. Yeah, he was the guy who Tiger Mask took his place in like the first episode.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he's still fucking... he's not too happy with the thing. And also, everyone, especially like his friend from New Japan Wrestling, is really worried that it's like, dude, stop doing your signature stuff.
Tiger Bass speaks Mr. Question when Mr. Question runs out of gas.
Yeah. And I thought they were going to do the thing of he's the original Mr. Question.
No, he's one of Mr. Question's trainees, who is also really old, which begs the question, how old was Mr. Question? I suspect that was revealed in the first series.
Yeah, maybe he was already like 100 in the original series, and for him to be like 200 would be ridiculous now. Yeah.
But then he explains that, yes, you are Tiger Mask, but you're going to need a finishing move.
And it's like, a finishing move? It's like, yeah. You know, there was a tiger, fucking this thing. And then Mr. Question beat that, and then he had to come up with a new killer move.
Yes.
It's like, yeah, you need a killer move, dude.
So I assume that's what next week's is going to be all about.
Yeah, you got to get a finisher. That seems to be what it's about, yeah.
Yeah, and we also get the next matches are It's the Ace versus Yellow Devil and Tiger Mask versus Tiger the Dark.
Yeah. So I can see one of those matches being very short.
Well, I don't know. It might not be, because it is Hiroshi Tanahashi. I'm not sure they're going to job him out to Yellow Devil.
Okay.
I suspect it will be some sort of contest.
And right. I suspect, or at least make him look good. Yeah.
Or Yellow Devil will have to cheat to win.
Ah, that could be it. Yeah, just be underhanded about it.
Yeah.
I did like the amount of like dissing of WWF. I mean, World
Global
Wrestling,
Wrestling Monopoly.
That's it, yes. Just people calling him out. It's like, ooh, there's so dirty. Also, the ref does not do his job half the time in these matches.
Well, that's a bit like
that's standard, isn't it?
There was on Wrestling Observer, because they just announced yesterday they're going to do a WWE UK championship. They're having a tournament in January. And somebody said, you can already get a WWE UK t-shirt, and it was a picture of the Global Wrestling Monopoly t-shirt you can get.
That's good stuff. I did like the thing of your man saying, the Mr. Question going, yeah, it ruined Indian wrestling, it ruined such and such a thing. Because it's like, you guys are all but calling out this company.
Yeah. Any resemblance to people living or dead is purely coincidental.
No, there are actual people who are currently wrestling in this.
Apart from that. But on the Global Wrestling Monopoly front.
Oh, no, it's totally different.
Yes,
it's
commentator.
Not like Tiger it's not like Tiger the Dark is wearing fucking Kane's fucking leotard thing. No! No.
And that commentator doesn't look like Vince McMahon at all. No.
I was wondering, was he supposed to be the Vince McMahon, or was the friggin' ref supposed to be, you know, the...
Probably a bit of both.
Yeah. I mean,
Vince McMahon tends to hire commentators who look like him when he was younger, so...
it could just be another one of those, yeah. Maybe he'll show up yet, we don't know.
Maybe he's Mr. X.
I thought we saw Mr. X.
We have seen him once, but I'm even wondering, because we only saw him in the room with Miss X, we haven't seen him anywhere else, and there's that bit in the opening credits where it looks like Mr. X and it turns around and it's Miss X. I wonder if he is actually there or not, or whether she's just hallucinating him or something.
Like, he did die in this, and you think I'm his replacement, who's exactly him.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Right. Or he's a ghost. A ghost.
I mean, like, it's wrestling, so anything can happen.
Anything can happen. Right. Oh, what to go? Let's go with Classicaloid next.
Sure.
My Beloved Jolly, episode 10. It's Ghost in the Shell with classical composers.
Chopin would be a total nerd, you guys.
Yes.
Just on the internet with them idol creators.
Yeah, so Bach's company has launched a idol app. And, of course, Sosuke and Chopin are addicted to it. And Chopin makes this idol called Jolly, who is enjoying it, but then he's like, she's only saying the things I program her to do. So he then zaps it with his music, and then she becomes alive inside the program.
Yeah. It becomes more high res and everything. And no one's disturbed by this. No one's just like, oh, wow, this is a new idol on the scene, or a virtual idol
on
the scene.
She becomes super popular. But then sort of begins to fall out with Chopin when Chopin
she gets too big for her boots.
Yeah, refuses to follow all her orders.
Yeah. She kind of starts running the biz. And it's like, hey, I don't need you to write music for me anymore. I quit. Well, she doesn't quit. She actually just keeps making stuff on her own, apparently, somewhere on the internet.
And then, so Chopin's going to go in. Well, first of all, the other guys go into...
Well, I think he says, I'm going to go into the internet.
Yeah,
using music.
But before that, they're going to... List wants to go and give him a talking to. But as soon as he says that he's in love, List is suddenly perfectly okay with everything.
Like, List thinks that he's in love with a dark spirit or something like that, and it's draining the life out of him, but it's just like, oh, it's so beautiful, love, man. And then it's like, okay, this has gone on a bit too long.
Yeah, so he's going to go
basically
in.
What it turns to,
he's
going
to use his music to go into the internet to be with Jolly, but instead he sends everybody else into the internet.
Everyone but him goes into the internet, yes.
Including the bird riding a Roomba.
As a background thing, that was great to be constantly happening.
The Roomba was the B-plot of this episode.
Yeah, yeah. And the bird became part of that, obviously.
Yes. So they end up in the internet. They meet Pad, who's also got a human form in the internet.
He's a pretty boy. Who could believe it?
He's a sarky butler. Sosuke recognizes him from his sass.
Yeah. Because there's no other way to recognize him. He doesn't sound the same.
And then the woman who I still don't think has had a name, who works under back.
Which woman?
The one in glasses who works for Back. The one who isn't a classicaloid. She's a virtual classicaloid is being created. We have to capture it and copy its code. Then we won't need to recapture those other classicaloids. We'll just be able to make our own virtual ones.
Yeah, and when Chopin and thing hear about... Not Chopin, when the other two guys that are working for them hear about this, they're kind of like, wait, so we're like fucking retired now? Because you can just keep cloning Hatsune Miku's for yourself.
Yeah, so she tries to capture them with the code, and they've got to introduce a virus to get rid of it, which they use the music, which makes the Roomba into a giant vacuum to vacuum up. But either way, Jolly is going to be returned to being an app. She'll either be stolen, or she'll return to being a standard app.
Yeah, and she pleads with Chopin, and is like, listen, I just like making music with you, dude.
Yes.
I don't want to be someone else's tool kind of thing. He returns her to her.
Yes, and he's very sad, and we learn that it's possibly the classicaloid of George Sand was where he created.
Yeah, yeah, or between that and a virtual idol type situation. And and then he just goes back to a different app, I think.
Yeah, and then and Bark tells that woman who I don't know the name of,
Glasses
Finney.
Yeah.
When she wants to carry
on. Well, in subtitle, it just looks like he's saying, fine. Yes. And he's just like, oh, when he actually means stop.
Yes. I'm slowly learning these musical terms the other way around by taking the context and realizing what they mean.
Yeah.
So this is another good episode. And getting a focus on Chopin was good and had nice emotional beats as well as comedy.
I think I prefer the comedy to the emotional beats in this show. They seem to work better for me.
Okay.
Yeah, that's just me though.
But yeah, I mean, this still had plenty of the comedy as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not much of Kanai though, this episode.
No, she kind of appears at one stage to tell him to stop fucking around with a Roomba. And then that's her for the episode, I think.
And Beethoven is completely nonplussed about being trapped in the internet for the rest of his life. That was...
Yeah, and then he keeps producing things. Like, when they're trying to break into Chopin's room, he's like, I have what appears to be a crowbar.
Oh, yes. Thank you for reminding me of that. I think that might have been my favourite line.
That was pretty great. Later on, he says he'll fix the Roomba, because they can't get Chopin to fix it again. And they're like, no, you'll just put flamethrowers on it. he's some good, like, just, I'm going to say it, like a one-liner type situation in this episode.
Yeah, although there's the bit with that woman whose name I don't know. There seems to be, like, some sort of rivalry with her and Kanai's dad, though. Because it was like, if I can do this...
Yeah, we don't have to rely on the professor's work kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm sure she'll get a backstory eventually.
Hopefully a name.
And a name, yeah. She may have a name already. But
she might have a name, but they've only mentioned it like once.
I was going to say, last time I looked up, she's not even on the website, so...
Jeez Louise.
She appears to be the villain.
Go figure.
That's Classicaloid. Right, here we go. We've got Yuri on Ice left. We've got Bungo Stray Dogs left. Anything else we got left? I think that's it, isn't it?
I think that's it. It feels like more, but...
No, I think that's everything. What do you want to do? Yuri or Bungo?
Let's go Yuri.
Okay, Yuri on Ice, episode 11. Gotta supercharge it. Oh, sorry, supercharge it. Grand Prix final short program in which JJ's world collapses around him in exactly the same way Yuri's world collapsed around him the year before.
And it was nice seeing the kind of visuals of him seeing the other skaters as, like, above him and stuff.
Yeah.
Even Yuri being like, ha-ha, I'm evil. And it's just... It's kind of like at the start of this show when we thought Yurio was like, ooh, he's this big threat. It's like, no, he's just this up-and-coming kid. Like, dude.
Yeah, that cut when he first... When it first goes and it's just that, like, brief shot of Otterbeck because he was the guy who'd just been on before him.
Mm.
It's like, that was such a good edit.
Yeah, yeah. This is really well put together.
Yeah, my other favourite cut is the one earlier on with Pitchett in the flashback. Mm. Him taking the selfie, which appears just to have one hamster on his shoulder, and then cuts to the other side of his head. There's like another two hamsters, one's crawling in his hair.
I was kind of thinking, like, dude, how many fucking hamsters have you got? That was pretty good, yeah. I think this was really well directed because you feel bad for JJ.
You do,
and
yes.
He's a complete bollocks. But it's kind of like, nah, he didn't deserve that. And it's like, but he kind of did. He kind of deserved to be knocked off his pedestal a little. And even at the end, you know, I think it's his unnamed girlfriend who gets the crowd worked up to cheer for him.
Yeah.
And he kind of gains a little bit of that confidence back. Not that he messes it up completely. He just doesn't do enough rotations. He doesn't land properly on a few, I think. Sorry, what were we going to say?
But do you feel like this episode, as much as it's a setup for the final episode next week, it's a setup for a second season as well?
I think so, yeah, yeah. Because, and I mean, like, presumably, just as a basic thing, like, we're kind of seeing JJ being at the start of where, like you say, Yuri was at the start of this show.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, well, then we'll get to see other characters' growth and stuff.
And it's also like the reaction of Victor to Yurio's performance and Christoph's performance.
Yeah, kind of yeah, feels he's like all them improve outside of him. Because,
yes, and it almost feels like that's... And he seems to be getting something from their performances that he's not getting from Yuri's performance.
Well, it's also he's seeing that before in his life, and he mentioned in this episode that Victor used to have a... He used to kind of like reinvent himself for everything. So yeah. Nothing felt like an accomplishment because it was just, I've just done a new thing. It was no building on it. But everyone had to step up to his level.
Yes.
But now that he's out of the picture, he's seeing them come into their own and seeing what they can do for themselves. It's like the Swiss guy kind of like said, oh man, it's going to be boring without Victor. But he's doing better than he's ever done.
In order to try and make Victor come back.
Exactly, yeah, but it's basically like by Victor stepping down, he's actually let these guys come into themselves. And like even Yurio, like, who probably wouldn't have been given a shot up to this point, or maybe would have, but yeah. Would have been still in his shadow. And at this thing, he outscores his record high score, I think. Yeah.
And obviously there's Otterbeck, where obviously nobody knows anything about him, and...
But we kind of know him enough now to go, like, to kind of root for him, even. Yeah,
yes. Yeah, and by the end of this, he's like, Yuri's in fifth place, isn't he?
Fourth or fifth, I can't remember.
Maybe fourth, because I think he's ahead of Pitchett and he's definitely ahead of JJ, of course.
Yeah, I think that's the way of it, because I think it goes Yurio, Otterbeck, Christoph?
Yeah, is it? That sounds about right.
Yeah, I think that's the order of it, all right, yeah.
Yeah, because we learn a bit more about Otterbeck, about how he was never good at ballet, so he decided to forge his own... way of, it's like, you don't have to be good at ballet to do ice skating, you can do it in a different way.
And he does, like, a thing only he's been able to do.
Yes. But also that was kind of a nice reminder of the plot point from early on, is like, this is the last year that Yurio is going to be able to perform in this style. It's like,
that's right, because his body will go
puberty is going to hit him hard at some point.
Next season, he's going to have the deepest voice.
Yeah, which is why I figure it's like, that's kind of feels like there's like the sense that, oh, maybe Victor will come back to performing. Maybe Yuri won't retire. And there's that other plot
and then
point
that
of like...
That changes it, obviously.
Yes, Yuri may win this time, but then find next time when his body's changed that he can't maintain the height he was at.
Or again, it could be his story of him starting off, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
This is his first professional thing. So it, for him not to win at this stage isn't the end of his career. It's just he has to push harder, you know, the kind of rocky ending, that kind of thing. There's a lot that can come out of this, and there's so much more they can do with it, and I imagine they fucking will, because they'd be mad not to.
Yeah, so this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good, good stuff.
Ah, so good. And again, it's... this episode, I think, did the most work for... I mean, like, besides the flashbacks and cuts to guys reacting to what they're doing, it's mostly the commentators talking.
Yes.
They've tricked us into watching skating. And I love it. It's great.
Yeah, I was almost... Because when it starts off, it was like, it's quite a while into the year's performance where you get before you get his
monologue.
Yeah, yeah, and it's like, yeah. I was like, oh, I was almost, you always had me there. I always thought you were just going to present it as an ice skating
as a TV show, yeah, or as an ice skating show. Yeah. Great stuff.
Right, let's wrap up some more great stuff. Bungo Stray Dogs, episode 23, Rashomon, the Tiger, and the Last Emperor, in which, gosh, look at all these guys' names again. Atsushi and Akutagawa finally understand each other a little bit better.
Yeah, and it comes over the course of the episode as things are revealed and as they kind of as things are said, and I really like how that develops and how their opinion changes as it goes.
And the key moment, of course, is Fitzgerald saying, "You two are so much alike,"
which... and they're like, "Fuck you." It's a really good reaction. I think one of my favorite bits is right at the fucking start where he's talking to Dazai in the earpiece.
Oh, yeah.
And what is it? Like, Dazai says, okay, just do what I fucking say, right? And we'll be fucking out of this shit. And he's like, hey, Dazai's on the phone for you. Throws phone off the cliff and the dude fucking jumps after it. And Dazai fucking hung up on it.
Yeah.
Dazai's such a dick, but you gotta fucking love him for just sheer dickishness.
But Akutagawa is so needy.
He is so needy, but it's just like, it's really dick move when you know he's that fucking needy.
But then Atsushi is needy in his own way, which is the pop.
Yeah,
which
yeah,
is the similarity
yeah.
between them, is that Atsushi
absolutely.
Is
needy. He has a need for one person. Sorry, Atagawa has a need for one person, whereas Atsushi has a need for pretty much everyone's approval.
Yes.
Kind of approval for himself, which I don't think he's ever going to get. Yeah, but...
Oh, it's got the approval of not wanting to be hunted down or blamed for things, I think, is kind of...
For, like, justify my existence.
Yes.
From other people, yeah.
Yeah, and we learn that Fitzgerald is after this book to raise his dead daughter from the dead.
Yeah, he gets a little tragic backstory because he's ringing his wife initially before Atsushi comes in on them. He's like, hey, dude, I was fucking making my goodbye speech. Come on.
And his ability is, if he spends money, the more money he spends, the more powerful he becomes.
Okay, not quite what I guessed, but still pretty great. good stuff. So, yeah, you see he's like, oh, I better spend 100,000 now. Or I think it's 500,000 he spends to up the ante. Yeah, and he gets kind of the glowing lines thing on him.
Yes, and the other little plot is Kyoka, they're going to let... Kyoka be set free, presumably, to help join this fight.
Yeah, but Dazai specifically going is like, hey, so there's like this fucking test, and he like tells her the test, which kind of negates the fucking test.
But he's also trying to tell her that, yes, because she thinks she wouldn't be able to pass the test.
Yeah,
she says that. It's like, how many people have you killed? He's like, 35, and he's like, is that all?
Yeah, 35, is that all? Fucking, yeah, okay. I mean, like, I'm not going to out and out say I've killed more than that, but I definitely have.
Yeah, it's kind of like you don't fully understand the sort of people who are in this armed detective agency.
And again, he's, it's one bit I think actually does, and it doesn't justify fucking watching it, but it does justify the existence of that little miniseries thing, where he's looking at the picture of his, or he's seeing the image of his friend who died. And it's kind of like, yeah, we can't live up to that. That guy was fucking class, that kind of thing.
Yes.
But again, yeah, you could skip it. It's fine.
Yeah, I suspect everybody's got some weird darkness behind them apart from Doppo.
Well, he might.
He's kind of got
we kind of seen what his
thing
is.
Seen a bit, yes, but I don't think it was necessarily killing people.
No. I think that was what we've seen of his past is probably the extent of it. Yeah.
Yeah, and obviously Kenji is some sort of simpleton who's super strong.
Sure.
Obviously Rampo we know is kind of messed up thinking that he's got an ability, but it doesn't have
sorry, go on.
But he's got he thinks he's got an ability, but he hasn't got an ability.
It's suggested in that last one that he kind of knows that he doesn't have an ability, but he can't admit it because he'd look like a fucking idiot. So he just pretends to not know and make himself look kind of stupid. Okay.
And we don't know the deal with the president. We don't really know the deal with the medic, do we?
I think the doc probably has...
apart from her sadistic...
I think the sadistic streak that she employs in everyday work is her dark side.
True, yes.
There might be more to it than that, but yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, this is a really good episode.
Yeah, for something that is a lot of guys talking to each other, it's like, oh, I'm going to fight you, and then actually fighting, and cuts back between that. Really, really good episode.
Talking and fighting, and then running away, and then realizing you've run to the bit where to a dead end.
Several times, yeah. I did like them awkwardly sharing an elevator at one point.
Yeah, standing in each corner.
And it was just like, this guy.
But yeah, at the same time, it was good. It was both cathartic to see them fight the bad guy and also cathartic for them to make some sort of progression away from the negative aspects of their characters.
Yeah, yeah. They're weirdly kind of growing.
Yes.
Not exactly the time and place for it. As they're constantly going like, it's the ticking clock, it's about to crash into the city, you got 10 minutes left, etc., you know.
And they get called stray dogs, it's the title of the show.
Does that mean it's the end of it? Because that's like, it's like, oh, we've said the title, that we can't possibly do anymore. That's my worry, that it's like, we got to get the title in before we end it.
I think it'll be a while before there's some more, but...
Yeah.
But yeah, it was good stuff.
Mm,
I think it's everything. Next week we'll add Mr. Osomatsu. JRR special 2016, and we'll say goodbye to some things as well. JoJo's, Bungo Stray Dogs, Yuri on Ice, I think.
I think Dragon Ball is ongoing, right?
It is, yes.
Okay.
We've even started announcing things for February, so yes, it's definitely ongoing.
Yeah, grand.
We're still playing Catch It with Bono Bono.
We're still playing that.
Assume Bomber Chan's going on. Drifters, I'm guessing. I think we've got two more episodes because...
Oh, it's actually two more. Okay.
Yeah, because it airs on the day we record, and I can't watch both. Right. I can't manage to watch JoJo's and Drifters.
Just get them both in.
Bungo Stray Dogs as well is on a Friday now as well.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll be like next time when we start up again in the new year, we're going to be doing a lot of new stuff.
No, we won't. We, as you'll hear on the preview episode.
Either we'll be doing a lot of new stuff, or it'll get significantly reduced in runtime.
We'll be watching more episodes of Bono Bono each week.
Oh, we don't want to catch up too quick on it.
Do we have to do it like Lupin, where we had to catch up on that?
Okay.
Right, yeah, that ends this week's episode of Let's Go JoJo. Be back here next week to hang with the Let's Go gang. And in the meantime, check out our regular podcasts at secretofthesailormadness.blogspot.com and dynamitingthebrain.com. Goodbye.
Bye.